Mario Avalo. Today, my guest will be Katie Baldwin, soon to be...
Mrs. Avalos.
Katie Avalos.
What?
Sure. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about President Barack Obama and the current situation in the U.S. The U.S. is a very complex, diverse. It would take a lifetime to really examine every factor that most of our population deals with.
Let's talk about some politics.
Let's talk about some politics.
Let's get it done.
Mr. Obama, grade from A to F. What do you give him?
Give him a C. I think it's a balance between like public perception of what he's done and what he's actually done. And I think as president, partly, you know, to get your job done effectively, you have to have the positive public support behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And he can be so wishy-washy about things, or he doesn't take a stance on things. And
always trying to compromise.
Which is not a bad... It's not a bad thing for a president to do. I think that you have to if you're going to get anything done. But I think that a lot of his support wants a strong statement from him one way or another about issues, and he just doesn't give it. And it's really alienating to his base, and you have to have that base. I mean, look at what happened to him in the midterm elections. You know, he did a lot of things that alienated his base, and people turned on him. And
I mean, what did he do to alienate his base?
I think, you know, he does the sneaky things like... you know, he never came out and really made a strong public stance about Ferguson. And everyone figured that that would be something, especially as a black man, besides the fact that he's president, that he would come out and hold a strong position on. It was a subject that was important to, you know, millennials. And he'd make a public support there. You know, there's the Monsanto Protection Act that he kind of snuck in. A lot of stuff that's important to a lot of the young millennial liberals that voted him into power... you know, that really were his base during the presidential elections, and he's kind of done these things to reduce their confidence in him, and then, you know, they kind of went in mass and voted Republican, or he, at least he galvanized enough support among, or enough detraction in young Republicans to get them out to vote.
I think for me, he was the example that no matter who you vote for, like, it's a system. And you're just, there's a driver, but the track's there. And so it doesn't matter what you try and do. Like, you have to stay on that track, you know. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think that he's aged terribly in 8 years. I think he went from, like, what, being 40? Or how old was he?
I think he was in his late 40s. He's older than JFK.
He's older. He's fucking like pushing 70 right now. Like, he's gray from head to toe.
I think being president probably does that to you.
I never thought about the Ferguson part, and that part, you're right, that he was always like, everyone stay calm and believe in justice. And it's like, no, motherfucker. Like, there's always two justice systems in America, you know. And I like to think that the justice system now is more about rich and not being rich. To, you know, that's, I think that's the color that matters now the most. It's like green. If you have green or you don't have enough green, it's what's starting to matter more in America. Whether or not, it's not about color anymore, it's not about race, it's more of a thing where it's influence and the haves and the have-nots. And I think that that's becoming the norm nowadays. But yeah, I never thought about it that way, that on Ferguson he didn't say anything. Like, he was just like...
Like, and when you think
just trust the system. But it's like, dude, the system's flawed there. Like, what do you think there's so much of a bad relationship between the people and the authorities in that city is because the system has been flawed enough
and
to let it get that way.
I think, you know, the big thing when you talk about Obama alienating his base, I mean, who do you think votes for Obama? You know, Obama, as a Democrat alone... And then as a black president, you know, he really galvanized and created a lot of hope for the black community, that, you know, or even minority communities in general, that this is someone who's going to know our issues, who's going to know that part of the story, who's going to fight for that part of the story. And then to come out and make no statement or show no sign of support one way or another on an issue that everyone, I think, probably assumed he would have a great deal to say about was probably extreme. I mean, probably it was. It was extremely alienating to people who said, hey, this is an issue you should have some, you know, feeling for us on. We are your base. We are the people who voted you into power. We are, you know, we've come out in greater support for you than any other candidate before you. And not only are you not going to back us up, but you're not going to say anything.
Yeah, I think that's what Obama. I think that might be his legacy. His legacy will be, did he do a way better job than Bush? Yes, like 100%. Like there's no comparison. For me, I always have to go back and think, is like, does he look so good only because Bush was so terrible? Like that's a real thing, like when you compare.
You know, or does he look, at the same time, it's a double-sided coin, because does he look so bad because what he had to dig himself out of was so bad? And there's, you know, people, the promise was there that he was going to do these amazing, great things, and there was these high expectations for him, but when you're starting from less than the bottom, you know, is it an incredible amount of progress from where we were? Absolutely. But, you know, digging yourself, you know, out halfway when people were expecting you to dig yourself out all of the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, it kind of loses, because all we're seeing is, you know, you still have halfway to go to even get us back to where we were pre-Bush administration.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking right now when you were saying that especially towards his second term on the Bush administration, like when someone asks someone in the presidential administration like a question, Dick Cheney gave the answer. Like Dick Cheney was the face, he was the voice, like Dick Cheney was calling the shots, doing everything. And then I look now at Obama and I'm like, where the fuck is Joe Biden? Like Joe Biden is in the background high-fiving people, like taking pictures. But yeah, this presidency is going back to what it should be. Like, if you're the president, you are the face. I was still a teenager and I don't really get what the world was or what American society was when I was growing up. But I knew who Dick Cheney was. And I would see Dick Cheney on the morning, Sunday, talking heads in the morning, talking about we're doing this because of this and this. And if you don't agree with it, you're not American and all that stuff. But it was like, it was Dick Cheney's presidency. It wasn't really Bush's towards the end, you know?
I think it probably was always Dick Cheney's presidency to a certain extent. During the first, Obama's first term, his first election into office, you know, you're talking to someone who came off of being I was a hardline Republican. And I didn't know why. I mean, that was part
young
of the
Republican Katie?
Young Republican Katie. And I didn't necessarily know why. I kind of was regurgitating information that I had been told. And then, you know, I was learning and I was going to college and I was kind of changing my views about the way a lot of things were. And then I saw a guy like Obama. And at the time, I still considered and identified myself as a conservative. And I saw this guy like Obama and I said, like, this is really, like, this is the change we need. This is someone who's going to get something done. This is, this is a movement and I'm going to get to be part of it. And I voted for him. And I think a lot of people who were probably on the fence saw him and voted for him. And they didn't see him as this hardline liberal. They saw him as, you know, young and something so different than what we had been experiencing. And we were so, I think really at the end of the day, we were so desperate to get away from, you know, whatever the Bush administration was or what we saw it to be, that we probably would have voted in any Democrat.
Yeah, you're right. We were like fed up. And you said something really important, that people did not see him as a hardline liberal, because he's not. And one of my biggest pet peeves is I think at the end of the day, I don't like Obama. I think at the end of the day, I don't like him because he is the end game. He is the king. There's no future for him in politics. No one ever becomes president and then comes back and just stays in the Senate for like 10 more years. Like, you're done. Like, that's the end of the game. There's no more for you. You're gonna go back, write a couple memoirs about your tenure. Maybe you'll give a couple speeches here and there. When something's going on, you might jab in your opinion. Yeah, jab in your opinion, but at the same time, it's the first day of 2015, you have 2 years You have 2 years from here on out to define your legacy as our president. He should be fucking gunslinging reform left and right. You know? Because what's probably going to happen is I think that the switch is going to happen. Most likely a Republican will get voted next year. Because I think America goes through that switch now. That whoever gets elected from now on will most likely, unless they're the biggest fuck up on earth, or unless Prince Charming shows up with the best fucking campaign ever, you're going to be a two-term president by default. You know, people don't like change.
I think that if you're going to be a two-term president, and I think that, you know, one of the things...
But do you think it's set up that when you get elected president, like, you most likely, very terrific chance will be a two-term?
I mean, I think that there's probably a pretty good chance. I think that, you know, one of the things I do truly think, and one of the things we've talked about, you know, about this generation and about what, you know, what drives this generation politically, our generation, you know, we're considered one of the millennials, 18 to 34. That's us. We're right there in the thick of it. And, you know, we are so desperate for, like, immediate gratification, and we don't get what we want. We're like, okay, well, this one thing wasn't working, so rather than, like, stick with maybe just a slightly altered version of this, we're going to go so dramatically different. I think it's probably what galvanized many on the fence, you know, potentially young ex-conservatives like myself to vote for Obama. You're like, this is so different, and this is going to be the change we need, and everything's going to get just so much better. And then now that Obama is not living up to our idea of what he should have been, then we're going to be like, oh, well, obviously being a Democrat fucking didn't work, so we're going to switch it up, and we're going to vote Republican, and this is going to be the change we need, and this is going to be the thing that's going to do it for us, and this is where it's going to get different. And we're never satisfied with a subtle change or a minimal change. We need big change now, and it's probably part of the PR problem that Obama has, is that we were asking for that, we were demanding for that, we were expecting that, and it never happened, which it couldn't have happened. I mean, American politics doesn't work that way.
And I think there's a problem with that. And there's a problem with that because information and the circumstances of a situation change so dramatically that we don't have time right now for Congress to still be working the way it was working 100 years ago. Like, that should not be appropriate anymore. I think with My argument that I always bring up against Obama was, yes, things change slowly, and there is another party, and the other party kind of has control of the legislation right now. So you always have to, and the other party at the end of the day makes up half of the population of the United States. But there's certain things that you can do just by being president, not just saying, and he's done little hints of that left and right. For example, the issues with marijuana. He's allowing every state to legalize marijuana in some form or another, all right? Just come out and say it, man. Like, have some guts. Like, have some confidence in yourself as president. You see half the states are regulating it in some way. You see Washington, Colorado, and Oregon. It's recreational. Be a fucking grown-up and be like, okay, marijuana federally... maybe not so illegal. Like, things like that. Like, the marijuana thing would be one. The other thing would be gay rights. He made federal government now recognizes gay marriages, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can just come out and say it, man. Like, just say it.
And I think, you know, that is one of the things, and one of the biggest disappointments from him in terms of, and it's not so much a reflection necessarily of the job that he's doing, the things that he's trying to get past, but again, like, it goes back to this kind of public perception of who we believe him to be, is that he doesn't come out and he doesn't make definitive... He's very much, and I think one of the things we maybe missed along the way, or when he was first elected, he is a politician through and through. He gives those politician answers to things. He doesn't come up because he needs to be, you know, I don't know.
And that for me, like, that's confusing for me because there is no future for him in politics. Once you're president, like, you're done.
And maybe once the Republicans, take over in January, he will come out and be more definitive. But, you know, even the recent stance that he's taken on immigration, everyone was so... you know, just flabbergasted, and, oh, he's finally making a stand, but really he didn't. The speech that he gave on immigration and on immigration reform, and there was nothing legally binding to what he was saying. Again, he didn't...
All he did was introduce it and just say it.
Yeah.
But nothing happened.
He introduced it, he said it, and he's like, well, I'm going to, you know, start to do things on my own if Congress won't. But what was it? It was a presidential...
It was an executive order or executive action.
It was an executive action. That's the difference. It wasn't an order. It was an action. And a presidential action, an executive action, doesn't carry any legal weight. It's basically him saying what his policy is. And it's great that that might be the first time that he's given us a definitive what is his policy. But now it's too late for him to get anything done because in January, Republicans come in and take over. So why wait until the 11th hour to come out and make your stance on immigration when it's too late to do anything, to make the fight even. I mean, it might have been a very difficult fight mm-hmm. early on in his first term when we were still looking at, you know, Republican control of at least half of the legislative body, but now it's full Republican control. So it's like, you didn't take a chance when it would have been a hard fight. So you're now going to take a chance when there's no fight at all because you know you're not going to win.
What do you think our generation is going to do about it? Like, is there going to be a new third party? And that's really, at the end of the day, that's the only thing that I could see maybe fixing the situation, is that you need a third leg to balance it out. Because it's going back and forth. Like, both parties are have some basis in good. And just for me to say that conservatives aren't right about some stuff, it would be ignorant. I'm not ignorant. I'm a lot of stuff, but I'm not ignorant. Like, I know that there is something in the conservative agenda where they have a point, you know. I want to help everybody too, but if there's no money to help everybody, I don't think I make a lot of money. I don't think, you know, me and you, we're in a household where we're way better off than a lot of our peers, but we don't have a lot of money, you know. We have enough money to do what we want and to have, I always think we always have fun, but we get taxed a shitload. Like, me and you together, like, we get taxed a lot at the end of the day.
And I'm with you. I think that there is, you know, that Republicans or some Republicans have good ideas, particularly, you know, I would even go so far as to say that for the most part, I would consider myself fundamentally, financially conservative.
And that's what, like, I think I am too. I'm a financial conservative, social Democrat.
Social liberal. Social liberal. And I think that you can be financially conservative and still care about the things that... You can say, hey, we're not going to spend more than what we have. That's financially conservative. We're not going to take a loan out. We're going to figure out what we have now and where we can spread that money.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is then in you know, Republican politics, not conservative, but Republican politics, is that what limited funds you do have, okay, we don't want to take any more loan out, but what limited funds we do have, you know, 50% of that is going to go towards military spending. And then the other 50% we're going to divide among all of these other important programs. There is no necessarily, and that's an over-exaggeration.
But no, but that's also a thing. Like, America is the jewel of the world. America, if you ask most Americans, you tell them, be like, hey, point at New Zealand for me. Motherfuckers are not going to know where it is. But if you go to New Zealand, you're like, hey, point at America. Everybody knows where America is. You go to Kenya, you go to everywhere in the world, there's a spotlight on America. We don't make cars anymore. Cars are made in Mexico, and we drag them 15 feet across the border. They're made like in El Paso. And Ford, GM, cars are made in El Paso, and we take them across the border 15 feet, and then we call them American-made. What America does produce, America produces culture. We produce culture, and we produce thoughts, and we produce culture. And there is such a subjective price value on culture that Jay-Z, Eminem, like those guys, Kanye, the Hollywood industry, like, that's what America makes now. We make a lot of money from that. America is the jewel of the world. There's always a spotlight in America, but right now we're not that great, you know?
No, we're not that great. And that's it's been like a little viral video from that show, The Newsroom, that's come out. You know, we are, you know, we're at the bottom of the list to other, you know, quote unquote, first world countries in terms of, you know, reading, math, education, student loan debt. You know, we are at the bottom of the barrel for industrialized nations, and we're still somehow this cultural, you know, this cultural example and leader. And I hate to even use the word, you know, jewel of the world, because it just seems, the phrase itself seems sort of...
And at the end of the day, we are, like, as our shortcomings has been, we invaded, like, 10 years ago, we invaded two countries that didn't deserve it. You know, one of them didn't deserve it. Iraq didn't deserve it. Afghanistan, we should have been in Afghanistan 10 years before that, but we chose to ignore it, you know? We went into Iraq, and right now, and we left Iraq, and right now, Iraq is the biggest mess in the world. It's like pure apocalyptic. You go out of your house, you're on your own. They were better off with fucking Saddam, you know? With Saddam, at least with Saddam, everyone was afraid of Saddam, so there was order and fear. But he kept all those motherfuckers in check. Now, Iraq could be the deadliest place on earth. And we left it that way. We were okay leaving it like that. There was no freedom there. There's no Operation Freedom there. We have a lot of shortcomings, but at the end of the day, you know what? We lead the music industry. We lead the culture industry. We lead fashion. Yeah, the fashion shows might be in France, but it's all influenced by Americans, you know?
And you know, then as a young American and who I am and what I value, that to me is actually just like the most depressing thing. Why aren't we? We have the power. We have the manpower. We have the infrastructure to be leaders in industry, to be leaders in technology. Like, who the fuck cares if we're leaders in fashion, if we're leaders in music? And those are, I think, are important parts of culture as a whole, but they're so minimal as to what we could be doing with our authority, but we're not. Our kids are failing out of school. We have, you know, rates of diseases that in other countries are not even an issue. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, you know, the obesity epidemic. You know, America is raising a generation of children that are not expected to outlive their, you know, their parents' life expectancy. Like, we should be leaders in those things. We have the power, we have the infrastructure, but then, again, you get back into the political system that's so ass-backwards with a two-party system
that I think it's because they're old. Everyone that's in office right now was already an adult before the internet came about. And that goes back to originally, what brought me back to the point that you said about most likely half our budget goes into defense. Why is half our budget going into defense? Why is even a quarter of our budget going to defense? No one's going to attack America. Like, we are, like, no, I mean, no other country. Yeah, we do need to spend a large amount of money, but if you think about it like a rational, logical being, why do we have to spend a majority of our money to destroy a bunch of people living in caves using Nokia fucking phones with no smartphone technology? Why does it take that much money to take these guys out? You know, and I believe, yeah, terrorism is a real thing. Fuck ISIS, fuck Al-Qaeda, fuck all those people. Like, they're real, and there's a lot of people that use false ideology to attack America. But it's like, are we really spending a majority of our future to kill a bunch of guys that live in caves? Like, that doesn't make... There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of something... There's a hole there, you know?
Well, and it's not just our financial future, but, it, you know, it's our manpower future. I mean, how many, you know, generations of young men... Who, you know, I read an article a couple of years ago about a town that, like, something like they had lost, like, 25 young men. Just this one small town in Texas lost 25 young men in Iraq. That takes a huge, you know, toll on us. I mean, these are young, and then the young men that do come back and aren't supported well.
They're not supported well.
You know, then how can they be... Not that they're not productive members of society, but if you come back with all of these, you know, these different issues from a war, you know, that you participated in, that, you know, who knows, maybe you were there, you were doing your duty, but you didn't believe in what you were doing, and you come back in your country, you go and you serve and you do what you're told, and you come back and your country's like, thanks for doing that thing you didn't really want to do and risking your life and watch your friends get killed. Also, go fuck yourself, like, have fun with your amputated leg, we're out.
We were talking about that this morning. This morning we were watching that commercial where there's a commercial with Mark Wahlberg, and while Mark Wahlberg is promoting
donating for the
Wounded Warrior Project, and all I could think, and I've said it before when we've seen that commercial, was like, Wounded Warrior should not exist. Like, there shouldn't be a private nonprofit organization trying to pick up the mess that we as a society made. It should be those motherfuckers in Congress and the president should, when you're doing all the budgeting and you're doing everything, kind of budget out some money to clean up the aftermath. That killing a person is hard. Watching the people around you die is hard. Coming back with no leg from a mission you probably didn't believe in, but you know, you gave someone your word and you signed up for something and you're gonna hold up to your word. And you come back with no leg, something that you inherently did not believe in, there should be some money already budgeted out to help you. There should not be a private organization asking money from us to help those people. Like,
and it's not just help them. I mean, if you give that much to your country should give you everything in return. You are doing your duty, whether, and that, like, more to the power of the people who go there and do their job the way they're supposed to, even when they don't necessarily believe in what they're doing. But
much respect to those people, because you know there's a lot of, like, logical but thinking people that when we were halfway through Iraq, they were thinking to themselves, they're like,
what are we doing here?
What are we doing here? Like, this is, we talk about freedom, and we talk about Operation Freedom, and I've said it in a lot of times where we give a bad name to Iraq and what Afghanistan is, but we are the buddiest nation to the United Emirates. The same people who don't let women drive. Women cannot drive in Dubai. But we are Dubai. Dubai does not have a military. You know who's Dubai's military? Our military. And we let Dubai get away with a lot of shit. Right now, gas is $1.99, baby. So today we drove by, you're like, hey, it went down another 10 cents. Pew, 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 pew. Like, but I'm like, it should always be that price. We're letting a bunch of foreign guys dictate the value of something. There's more cars on the road right now than there was 10 years ago. It boggles my mind, and I cannot put it together how gas now is cheaper than it was 6 years ago. There's more cars on the road. Like, if you supply and demand, like, what's going on? Like,
and we have talked about that, but there's something else going on. We get involved in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all of a sudden, you know, we're going in to take out, you know, well, originally, you know, we're going in to take out bin Laden, who was in Pakistan, which we won't touch. Like, and we probably, you know, they said, oh, he was in this compound in Pakistan, and we found him, that's where we executed him.
And everyone forgets that motherfucker was in Pakistan
but
the whole time.
But he was in Pakistan the whole time, and you couldn't pay me enough money to believe that we didn't know he was in Pakistan
the whole
5 years before we went in and eradicated him.
I've read some articles where really guys that are in the know that are, you know, hear a lot of shit that doesn't get to normal people, what they have said is, cannot confirm, but most likely bin Laden was dead years before that. But the timing worked out fine that they could introduce his death to the world. Like, yeah, we had killed bin Laden. Might not have been that night. We killed him a long time ago, but the timing...
And that, you know, and that...
His burial at sea? Like, a little iffy, right?
I mean, those are the questions that get raised, and I'm not as much of a... I'm not as much of a conspiracy theorist as you are.
Whoa.
But and so maybe I'm not as willing to buy into the fact that he was dead years before we got him. But the money that gets shoveled in, that we know about, that's getting shoveled into our defense budgets, is getting shoveled into Homeland Security. There's no way that someone could ever convince me that there's this, you know, this public enemy number one living in this, you know, 8-bedroom compound on the Pakistan border that we didn't know he was there. Everybody knew. There's just nothing you could do that would convince me that we didn't know that he was there. And that's where I think, you know, the timing worked out. When they went in to take him out, there was something about that timing and so much more that's going on than the American public is ever really well aware of.
Mm-hmm.
That was advantageous.
I think you're right that we probably always knew he was there. Let's say he did die on that night, and you know what? I can't say, like, let's say he did die. Officially, motherfucker died on that night. Everyone had victory shots, victory cigars. Everyone was high-fiving someone, you know what I mean? Poor fucking Rashad Mendenhall, who was at the Cardinals at the time, tweeted like, hey, I'm not going to take any pride in the man's death, even though he was hated. If you celebrate someone's death, you're a piece of shit. And he got so much shit for that, but he was right, though. He was like, hey, we killed a monster, but if you celebrate killing, then you become a monster. Don't be a fucking monster, you know?
And that's part of the, somewhere along the line, it became unpatriotic to be dissenting. And I think I truly believe that's part of the problem, one of the biggest problems of America now, that if you start throwing around the term, oh, that's unpatriotic, like, people shy away from that, like that's a thing. Like,
today,
oh, you're unpatriotic, you're un-American.
Today on Facebook, my friend Keith posted a picture that said, these two things is what every American should know. And there was a picture of a gun and there was a picture of the Bible. And I was like, calling bullshit on that. I'm like, that's an empty statement. One, the Bible is not American. And that's why I kept saying, I was like, the Bible's not American. Like I'm Catholic. We're planning a Catholic wedding. But at the end of the day, you know what? Separation of church and state, that is American. America is about the separation of church and state. And the only reason we are the baddest country in the world is because people were, some of the people we look up to, at the end of the day, didn't even believe there was a God, you know? And I respect that. I respect church and state. I respect that, hey, I love God, but I don't need God in my breakfast cereal. I don't need God in every aspect of my life. I can still be a good person. People can be good people without being religious people.
Well, and I think, you know, a big problem with that picture, a gun and a Bible. But I actually have a lot of problems with it. Americans is a gun and a Bible. If you read the Bible and you look at it from that aspect, the gun should have nothing to do with the Bible. Christ, the whole point of the Christian Bible, was a man of peace. His message was turn the other cheek. Don't do harm. Love your neighbor as yourself. So those two things shouldn't even be together anyway.
And you're right. And you're absolutely fucking right. Because me and you have talked about it. That we've talked about the Jews and Christ. A lot of the Jews turned away from Christ because they were expecting David with a sword. Not Jesus with
an olive branch.
With an olive branch. Like, that is the Bible. The Bible says the gun shouldn't exist next to the Bible. It should be like the Bible and then like a hand out.
My other point with that, in terms of this, these are the things Americans should know, gun and the Bible, Merca, is that America, the ideal of America is the melting pot. That's always what we're told. Oh, diversity. Diversity is the backbone of America. But how much diversity is there
It was when me and you were growing up. When me and you were growing up, that's what it was. And that's what made us great.
It's touted. I mean, it's still touted. It's still a buzzword. It's still something people like to talk about. Oh, we're so great. We're so diverse. What makes us great is we have all these different opinions. You can turn on Fox News right now and there's somebody there who's like, America's all about diversity, but this, but that, but that, like, so they love it. Diversity is a buzzword. Well, diversity means diversity in faith, diversity in religion. America doesn't all have to know the Bible. You can be an Islamic, you know, conscientious objector. You can be Buddhists, you could be, you know, you can believe in Baha'i, Zoroastrianism. Like, the whole point of America is that of religious freedom, separation of church and state, is that every American doesn't have to know the Bible. Mm-hmm. There's tolerance and freedom and space here to say, as long as you are not hurting somebody else. And again, you want to talk about like Republican ideals and this whole smaller government and less regulation, then they should back off of the Bible's nuts, because
that's over-regulation.
You have to be a Christian.
The Bible says we can't mix fucking fabrics. Like, I'm wearing, like, cotton, and I'm wearing, like, also cotton, but let's say I was wearing, like, silk. It's over-regulation. Don't push the Bible, you know?
But, and again, it's over-regulation and saying, you know, this is a Christian nation. No, separation of church and state. This is a melt. You know, you can't come and, like, try and like create these two things and hold them next to each other as equal. You can't say like, oh, we're all about diversity as long as you're a white Christian. Like, that they don't mesh, they don't gel. Those, you can't come and say both of those things, and that's one of the problems. And again, and somehow along the way, being un-Christian became tied to being un-American, unpatriotic. It became part of this fear-mongering, and I think that fear is what propels people.
Propaganda, and that's what I called out my friend Keith, and I was like, that's empty propaganda. Like, you know how right now me and you can look back on World War II propaganda that maybe had like Japanese people painted in a bad light, or had like German people painted in a bad light, and I'm like, hey, I can't believe people fell for that. Or World War I propaganda, which was even worse. Like, I can't believe people fell for those propaganda messages. But then you see this thing being passed around on Facebook today that, like, things Americans should know, a gun and a Bible, both aren't taught in schools. Like, that's propaganda. It's like an empty statement. And So many likes, so many people are like, yeah, pushing it, like, that's absolutely right. No, it sounds good, but unless you've ever read the Bible, don't you ever fucking come talk to me about the Bible. You know what I mean?
I think
it's a nice thought to say. Like, I cuss like a motherfucker. I'm not the best person in the past that I should have been. And at the end of the day, it's sad when I'm like, oh, I'm a lot better person than a lot of these people that present themselves as nice people.
And that, I mean, that's part of a whole different conversation about the people who participate in you know, in organized religions. And I think that one of the things that there's a takeaway from this, like, I do, as an American, I do believe in, I'm an American and I believe in the Bible and I practice my faith and I believe in you know, decide my second right amendments to own a gun.
Would you consider us liberals?
I would consider, yes.
Okay, but we love guns. Like, why don't people get that? Like, you can be a liberal and like guns.
I because that's, again, that goes back to that fear-mongering and this extreme division. If you're a liberal, then you have to be this one thing. And if you're a conservative, you have to be this one thing. Like, they don't, somehow it became along the lines that you couldn't cross the aisle, that you couldn't be a blend of both. And I think that that's why people like you and I are so essentially like confusing, because you're like, oh, you know, I want to put you in a box. I want to figure out what you are. If you're a conservative, these are the things you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you're a liberal, you must be, a bongo tapping, you know, peace loving beatnik pacifist. And I'm like, no,
nope.
If you come into my home, like, this is my home, and I will shoot you in the face if I'm afraid for my life.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I'm not an advocate for violence. I'm not saying I don't believe in unjustified wars. I don't believe in the militarization of police. I don't believe in violence for the sake of violence. I don't believe in the use of us. I don't think that there's any reason that an average American citizen should have a fully automatic, high-caliber, military-grade rifle. Your Second Amendment rights only go so far. I believe in waiting periods for, you know...
You believe in background checks.
I absolutely believe
in... Like, yeah, like, if... We make motherfuckers take tests to drive a car, right? If you can't fucking sit your ass down on a desk, take a test, present yourself well, we shouldn't even fucking give you a gun.
You know...
That's, like, a real thing.
That's a real thing. I think that there's, you know, places... jurisdictions that enforce wait periods and background checks have a 40% decrease in women who are killed by handguns. Women who are killed by domestic partner, especially by domestic partner.
Mm-hmm.
So you, this is very direct correlation. Like, here's something, like, if you have to wait to buy a gun, you might be less likely to shoot your wife.
Mm-hmm.
That means a very simplified part of that statement, but...
What? And it goes back to, you mentioned Ferguson before. You mentioned mm-hmm. the gun situation right now. Okay. The Ferguson
militarization
of police. Right?
Yes.
Me and you both have a lot of conservative friends. And conservative conservative people we know.
And
Those people should have been at the front of the line when the Ferguson police showed up in, like, tanks. Like, that was a real thing. Like, why are you showing up in tanks and full body armor and armor-piercing bullets? But those people kept quiet because I think that, and me and you both have said that there's still one, a lot of biasness and racism in America, which a lot of people don't want to admit. The same people that were shitting on Michael Sam, and you know what? Michael Sam was not a hero. Michael Sam was a bad example for people to get back to, but I always go back to Trayvon. Trayvon did not deserve
his shit. Not Michael Sam. That's a football player, baby.
No, I'm sorry.
Mike Brown.
Michael Brown. Michael Brown did not deserve what he got. You shouldn't die for stealing a box of cigarillos. And it was also a bad example of what could happen, but you had go back to Trayvon. Trayvon, at the end of the day, Trayvon was followed by a guy... And if I'm followed by a guy, baby, I'm going to jack him. Like, I'm going to jack him before he jacks me. Because if I'm being followed for blocks, I know that I'm being targeted. And it's part of, like, the switch that goes off. Like, when you grow up a certain way, like, you're going to hide behind some bushes. And when he walks by looking for you, you're going to jack that guy because he was going to jack you. And Trayvon was murdered, and we let Trayvon get murdered. At the end of the day, I always go back to Trayvon, and I'm like, that poor kid... was walking home in a nice neighborhood and we let him get murdered and they let Zimmerman off the hook, you know? And then Zimmerman beat his wife afterwards. And then Zimmerman had beat his wife before. And threatened
her with a gun.
Zimmerman, oh my. If Zimmerman is not killed randomly, like in a restaurant, like in our lifetime, like we failed as society. Like someone will off Zimmerman one day. And he very much will deserve it. Ferguson, racism, you know, because we know a lot of conservative people that should have been like, hey, those police should not have tanks. The same conservative people who there was a guy not paying multi-million dollar taxes in Utah. Was it Utah?
Mm-hmm.
With the cattle?
Yeah, yeah.
Those same people were, the guy showed up with backup and they pointed rifles at federal agents and we walked away. The federal agents walked away from not shooting those people who pointed guns at them.
And isn't that the case? Didn't they specifically put like women on the front line? Didn't the Tea Partiers like put female supporters like at the front of the line so the one federal agents?
You pointed guns at federal agents and those federal agents let you get off. There's a guy that killed a bunch of people in a movie theater in Colorado and he's white and he safely found his way in the back of a police car and you have all these colored men and colored young boys with BB guns being shot on the spot and you tell me that there is no bias. You tell me that people deserve it.
And again, you know, you talk about bringing it back to Obama. There's no statement on that. There's no coming out. There's no taking a stand. There's just nothing when it comes to that. And I think it's part of what makes him truly so disappointing as a president. And it overshadows all of the positive things that he's done for the economy, for education, the statements that he has made on things are just kind of lost to the fact that he won't come out and make a statement on these really big, galvanizing public issues.
Talk more about the economy. The economy right now, people in our age group have the hardest time finding real jobs, but what is the current state of the economy? Record-breaking, right?
The economy is record-breaking, but I was kind of looking at some different things, some interesting. You know, we're at a record high, but, you know, people in our generation, people of our age, are not actually making any more money than they were before the recession. There are more people employed, but we're not making any more money than we were before the recession hit. You know, college graduates are still working part-time jobs. 40% of college graduates are employed in positions that don't require a college degree. You know, but we're experiencing higher rates of student loan debt. The cost of education is so much higher than it ever was before.
Is that the new norm that we've gotten used to?
I think that it comes down to that while companies and corporations are making more profits than ever before, you know, and you want to talk about trickle-down economics, but I think that, you know, people talk about there is, you know, at the end of the day, like, human greed takes over everything. So while corporations may be doing better than ever before and stimulating the economy in that sense, they're not passing that down to workers. They might be opening up more jobs, but they're not maybe promoting or increasing the salaries for people who have already been there. They're not investing. Corporations are not investing in education. And you want to talk about failure to prosecute problems with Obama. You know, the people, the engineers, the architects of the recession, of the crash on Wall Street, every single one of those men got away pretty much scot-free.
And that's something that I talked to you about that a few months ago. A few months ago, I was about being wrong about, hey, maybe you thought you knew all the details about something or you thought something was the best. And me and you were discussing the current state of affairs at the time, and I had said, I got bamboozled, like I got tricked. Like, the bailout was the biggest trick in American history. Like, we were told that if we didn't bail these giant banks out, all these people would lose their jobs, all these people would crash. If we didn't bail these insurance companies out, all these people it'd be chaos, it'd be full apocalyptic chaos. And they sold us that idea, and those same companies took their bailout, and then still took everybody's house. They still took record-breaking foreclosures. They still took paid back lower interest than me and you paid back on our student loans. And at the end of the day, you have companies like AIG who's now suing the federal government for bailing them out. That's insanity. Like, that is insanity. And I go back to them, like, it takes a lot of humility. It takes a lot of knowing who you are as a person to be like, I was wrong. All those people that said don't bail them out, they were right. Every single one of them was right. We were sold an idea, and when it happened, it was terrible. And you go back to Obama again. Obama, not one peep from him. Not one peep from saying, like, hey, maybe we messed up on the on the bailout. Hey, maybe we messed up on this. Hey, maybe we messed up on that. Hey, maybe I should close Guantanamo Bay. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he doesn't come out with.
To me, I don't know. The whole economic situation, the economic crash, is a pay grade well above me in terms of exactly how everything fit together, because the American banking system and the government so intertangled, it's so difficult to say, like, hey,
yes,
one guy.
Right.
So you look at that, so maybe the bailout was necessary.
And that also has to do with what you said a little bit earlier before, is that right now the Dow is higher than it was in the last 10 years, yet people in our age group,
it's a record high,
are still working part-time jobs with college degrees, and it's like,
my thing is,
there's something missing. Like, there's a gap. We've gotten brainwashed and, like, be lucky you have a job. Be, you know.
One of the things I was just looking at, you know, 45% of millennials believe that a well-paying job is a privilege. Like, that it's something that, like, you kind of gotten away from that hard work and you're going to get this thing. It's, like, more of a... It's not really based on merit or hard work. It's like, oh, look, I'm really, really lucky to have a job that's going to support my family, or to be able to go back to that, you know, quote-unquote American ideal of, you know, a white picket fence and a stay-at-home mom and all that, you know, crap. But I think, you know, going back to the bailouts and saying, you know, hey, maybe, because I don't understand this, I'm not an economist, maybe the bailouts themselves are necessary for the bank, for the banking system, for the American public. The bailouts, as they were necessary. But that doesn't mean that then criminal prosecution of the people who engineered, who knew what they were doing, who knew the risks they were taking.
You're absolutely right.
That's the problem that I have. And
absolutely,
that's where,
right,
I'm, you know,
absolutely right,
disappointment in Obama.
If someone files bankruptcy twice within a certain amount of time, what happens to them?
Mm-hmm.
Jail time. There is jail time. If you file for bankruptcy, you fuck it up again 3 years later, you are facing jail time. Like, they're... And you have these people that destroyed an entire nation's economy, and you're telling me, like, no one's going to get prosecuted? Like, no one's going
to
do anything?
And that's the thing. I know enough, and I've read enough, and I've looked into enough to know that they have names. They have a list of names, and that's one of those things that if Obama, you know, had come out and said, you know, we're going to bail out the banking system, it's the best outcome for America, but to make sure that this never happens again, we are indicting, you know, A, B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to indict these guys, and we're gonna show. And that, I think, was the driving force behind the Occupy Wall Street movement.
That brings me up to this point. I hate it when someone older than me, and I'm not talking about someone that's like 40 or 50. I'm talking about someone that's 60 that says, you know, minimum wage was like $2.50 when I was a kid. But it's like, hey, the equivalent to that now, your $2.50 was $10.50 right now. But right now, the minimum wage equivalent to inflation is $7.50, which is not a livable wage. You know, not a livable wage on any terms. And you have a lot of companies exploiting people to that, exploiting people to, like, Walmart, exploiting people to be lucky you have a job.
And you have that question, you know, oh, you know, minimum wage is this, you know, but the cost of a college education is 200% more expensive than it was.
Schools should not be for profit. Like, what are you doing?
Even,
like,
I mean, in non-profit schools, remember the state. What in the fuck is the president of ASU doing with a multi-million dollar salary?
Thank you. Like, what? There's a lot of stuff C-rated party school. Michael Crow, president of ASU, makes multi-million dollar annually. Like, he doesn't do anything except go to lunches and sign off on things. Like, let's be honest. At the end of the day, when you're top dog, you go to lunches and you smile, you take photo ops with people. He does nothing to move the organization forward, yet he has the biggest chunk of the cake. I don't want to sound like a socialist, but you go back to, you know, the bankers, same thing. Like you said before, we have people's names. People should have been charged. Obama should have said something. Obama has done a lot of great things. And bringing it back to who Obama is that he's done a lot of great things where PPACA, not what we wanted it to be. We got offered, like, universal healthcare at the end of the day. It's mandatory healthcare for everybody. But you know what it did do? It made it so that people that had pre-existing conditions could get coverage. It made it so that people in college, you would stay under your parents' insurance until you're 26.
Hugely beneficial to me.
Hugely beneficial to everybody. The pre-existing one, I think they've tallied up and it saved over 500,000 lives since it's been open. 500,000 people now have a second chance at life.
I mean, there are things.
Because insurance companies couldn't tell them no anymore.
Obama's
not a piece of shit. He's done some things, right? You look at the conservative group. You know what? As much as we're shitting on Obama, but we're not shitting on Obama because at the same time we say how well he's done in certain aspects. Each party's identity has become from being independently, this is who we are, to our party is based on being entirely against
this other party.
If this party says that blue jets are the best flying jets in the world, then you know what? American Airlines.
Like, yeah, I mean,
that's what it is. The opposite. Just go to the opposite.
If Obama had come out and been like, you know what? I believe that the sky is blue and it's my favorite color. Then, you know, the next day on Fox News, it would have been like, Obama goes to war on rainbows, says all other colors are worthless pieces of shit, is painting White House blue. Like, it has become, so maybe Obama could have been more. And I do think that there are still things that are exceptionally disappointing. It wouldn't have cost him anything, especially after he was elected the second time. It would not have cost him anything to come out and make a public stance on issues. He should have done that. It's disappointing that he didn't
What issues do you think as a person that he should have taken a firm stance on that would have weighed very lightly on his outlook towards everyone? Like if he would have said...
I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me about whether or not it would have weighed
really lightly. Like you don't think that if he would have been like, hey, whether you're gay or not, federal government doesn't care.
That's
a real thing.
There are things that I think that he should have come out and made a stance on regardless
That's to do with my question. Like, what subjects do you think...
Well, you said, weighed lightly on it. And I don't think it was a matter of weighed lightly. He should have come out on gay marriage. I don't know about marijuana. You know, maybe he has his own personal beliefs about that. Who knows?
Guantanamo Bay. Still open right now. There's motherfuckers getting tortured right now this second.
I know. But you're asking me about the things, things that Obama should have come out and made a public stance on, especially after his second term, when he had nothing left to lose. Gay marriage, Ferguson, banking, abortion, the environment,
reproductive health care. He should have just been
The Hobby Lobby decision. He could have come out and said something very, very definitive about the Hobby Lobby. This is...
He let it slide.
That's to me why he is so... disappointing. He has this platform. He has this opportunity. He's not running for re-election. He's not backing candidates. Even his own party was slowly backing away from him. So he has nothing to lose.
Me and you talked about that. We talked about that in these last elections in November where, hey, have you noticed that a lot of these Democrats are running a platform that like, hey, I'm Democratic like Obama, but I'm not with Obama. Like if your own party... his best interest is to turn their back on you because you're not popular at the time, then you should have like taken full control and said, you are the leader of the party. You are the leader of the party. You are the leader of the free world. You are the leader of this country. That is your time to rise. And I'm not saying go down with an iron fist. I'm not saying be a dictator, but I'm saying that like if your own party members in really swing states are like, hey, me and Obama aren't buddies. You go back and you're like, hey, we might not be buddies, but at the end of the day, like, I am your commander in chief. Like, there's a certain amount of respect that there's.
But and again, you and I talked about that and about, what is it to respect your commander in chief? And I think as the American people, and again, this is, as the American people, we crucified George Bush in the media, in popular culture.
Well deserved.
I'm not arguing that. Absolutely well deserved, but you can't say this president deserves respect as commander in chief and leader of the party, and this president doesn't. We eroded that base. When we crucified George Bush and made him the subject of jokes, we can't then turn around and expect the Republican Party to not do that exact same thing to Obama. Deserved or not, we eroded the idea of respect for the commander in chief.
I did talk about that, but at the same time, like, I'm one of those people where circumstances do matter.
But I guess it's like, again, like, you go back to it, and deserved or not, that's what happened to George W. Bush. So we as an American population, eroded the idea that the commander-in-chief is a position that deserves respect. You talk again about, terrible things that came out of the Bush administration, aside from his politics and the economy, is the idea of what it means
world
to be...
world-beatingness?
Well, the world hating us, but what it means to be president died. What that position
the prestige.
Meant, the prestige died with George W. Bush, and we're not going to get it back.
If you disrespect someone, and especially because they're in a position of power, the next guy who takes his spot, like, he shouldn't have a special ticket to not get critiqued and not be hated and not have that opportunity to also be disrespected. And I think that's one of the things that I struggle with, where I take everything personal, and I think a lot of people, especially in our peers, we take everything personal. Everything is about us. Everything is about how can we get it the fastest? What can we get? How does it benefit me? Like, can I have the best? Can I have, like, the thing? And, you know, that's our generation. Our generation is the generation that got the whole, hey, thanks for being here. Here's your participation trophy. We're special.
Which takes me back to, you know, one of my original points in terms of, you know, why millennials turned on Obama is that he was this really, like, energetic, galvanizing, different force, and he was like, oh, you know, things are going to be so much different. Change, change, change. That was his motto, change. And we were like, yeah, we're going to get so much change. And as a generation, and as the ethos of our generation is that change means now. This thing is going to happen now. These changes are going to be real. They're going to be tangible. They're going to be right here, right now, and I'm going to get the benefits of them, not 6 years from now when the full force of these policies take into effect, not a generation from now, not when I'm raising my children, are we finally going to see the turn. No, now. You're going to take office on January 21st and on February 1st, like, motherfucker, I better have my change. And when we didn't get that, like...
That's exactly how it was, because a lot of it seems so simple to me. I'm like, hey, Guantanamo Bay, close that motherfucker. We're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan. Bring those motherfuckers back. Like, for me, it seemed like that easy. And it still seems that easy. Hey, it's very easy to be on the federal level and be like, hey, Obama, Dreams of Our Fathers, that book you wrote, remember that book you wrote? You told us you snorted coke. You told us you smoked weed all the time. Why are you letting, like, young men get thrown into prison for having, you know, an ounce of weed on them? Just because magically they weren't in a state that allowed it recreationally? Like, that is crazy to me. Like, it blows my mind. Like, it's like, dude, you told us you smoked weed all the time when you were growing up. You are letting these young men serve 5-year prison sentences for having an ounce of weed on them. And you're letting that happen on your watch.
It goes back to, Obama is a politician. He's going to try and play the game. And again, that's one of those things we're so disappointed in, that, like, he's not what he promised us he was going to be. You know, he said he was going to be something different. But to get to the level that he got to be president, to even get to the level of being a legislator, of being a senator, being a congressman, you have to be a politician. You have to play the game.
And I've always agreed with you on that point, that, like, hey, you have to play the game. Like, there's a circuit. There's a local circuit. And when you beat your local circuit on the races, you go to the state circuit. And then you beat the state circuit, you go to the national circuit. And once you go to the national circuit, there's a very rare circuit that you could be the fucking free leader of the world. Like,
leader of the free world.
Leader of the free world. And he's there. And he played the game awesomely as you could play it.
And for his first four years, he had to continue to play that game. He had to get reelected. But he should have come out and made those public, any public statements about what he believed. You know, he should have stayed State of the Union after he won reelection. Should have just been like a list of, like, all right, y'all motherfuckers, listen up. This is how I really feel about some shit. I've got nothing to lose right now.
Gay marriage? Let all the gays get married.
Go get married, gays. Smoke pot while you do it. Whatever. I don't care. But
he didn't.
When Reagan was in office, people didn't assume he was the shining example of, you know, who Reagan has been, you know, godified essentially to be now to conservatives. He wasn't when he was in office.
And I throw up on my dick every day. When people bring up Reagan and how awesome he was, I'm like, no, that guy, all our problems right now, you could 7 degrees to Kevin Bacon. To that motherfucker. Like, he's the Kevin Bacon of all our problems right now.
And then, but the question is that when we are our grandparents' age, you know, the grandparents that I have now that are absolutely just, oh, you know, not only was Ronald Reagan the best president that's ever presidented, that he was most good-looking, handsomest, he single-handedly fought all of China with one arm tied behind his back and the other arm was signing strong military line. Like, you know, when we're at the age that our grandparents are now, are we going to come be like, oh, and I remember Obama and he was so great and he was a shining example of what a Democratic president should be.
And you know what? I don't believe that'll happen because there's a different environment. There's a different society now. I think, one, it's harder for shady people to hide the shady shit they do. The internet, if you're a shady person,
people will find out.
And then, also right now we are at the Atari level. Do you know how video games work? Like there was Atari, then Nintendo, then Super Nintendo.
I do know how video games work.
Obviously, you love that shit.
Nerd.
Right now we are at the Atari level of technology. We're at the Atari level of what the internet is.
Isn't Atari the Atari level of technology?
Obviously, but Google Glass.
Mm-hmm.
The glasses. You know what the glasses signify? The glasses signify an end to line. Imagine if you were wearing your little Google glasses all the time and someone told you something kind of iffy and you were wearing your glasses and they were always on. You'd be like, he said that. Like, he said that and he shouldn't have said that. And he's like, nope, never said that. And you could go back in your Google glasses and you're like, no, you did say that. Like, you were lying. It's going to get way harder for shitty people to hide the shitty shit they do. And for me, I value freedom. I value what I do behind the scenes. You know, I'm not perfect. I do a lot of shit that people would frown upon. Everybody does. And for me to be like, hey, the trade-off to risk to not agreeing with it, Google Glass is worth that risk. That's what the future is. So me and you, when me and you get older, we're not going to be going back on what is Obama and who's the best president and dwelling on Ronald Reagan's nuts, because you know what those people can't do? Those people can't go back to the internet. Those people can't go back to YouTube and actually check what those people said. They have a memory of what they thought that person had said. And they also have a lot of memes on their computer, which they thought that person said. But if you don't go back and check those memes, if you don't go back and check those statements, if you don't go back and check the video footage, it's just memories. And I figure that I have a good memory, you have a good memory, but we've been wrong. I've been wrong. You've been wrong. Everyone's wrong on their memory. Like, your memory will fail you, you know? And sometimes you might glorify something in your head that was never there, but you yourself have patronized to it so much that it's a thing. And for me, that's, it's a realistic thing that's going to go away. That's not going to be an option anymore. If me and you are old and we hype up Bill Clinton to Bill Clinton is the man, hype of the world, look, Bill Clinton was a motherfucker of all time, we're not going to be allowed that, because he's going to be like, hey, you know what, at the end of the day, he did lie to America. He said he didn't have sexual relations with that chick, and he kind of did, you know, tried to play it off.
He did.
But we're not going to be allowed that Ronald Reagan buffer zone.
You'd think that we wouldn't now, but young conservatives who have the internet, who have the ability, I mean, young conservatives now have already bought into this, like, Ronald Reagan, a Republican.
But that's what I do. And that's what everyone's job should be as a good person, is call people out when they're being shitty people. Like, sometimes I'm seen as confrontational. I'm not confrontational. If someone goes on Facebook and posts something publicly that I'm like, that's a pretty ignorant statement, I'm going to call you out on being ignorant. And if I put out a pretty ignorant statement, I wish motherfuckers would just fucking come up to me like, you're an ignorant motherfucker. Because that's the best thing you could do. Like, I'm humble. At the end of the day, I'm full of myself, but also I'm humble. If you come to me and you're like, hey, you're wrong on that, and you prove me wrong, I will give you absolute credit on it. And that's what people should do. People should realize, like, hey, one, no one in our age group is ever going to change political parties. We're already set in our ways. So don't even bother. Don't even bother going on Facebook and fighting with your friends or fighting with your family members. It's not going to happen. Like, you're not going to magically say the magic phrase and it's going to turn them from Republicans to Democrats, and you're not going to turn them from liberals to conservatives. It doesn't exist. Like, when you're an adult, you're set on your ways, and it's the exception to the rule that someone wins you over. You don't have to argue with people, but just make sure that when people post something or when people say something that's super ignorant, you're like, hey, that's not true. Just as simple, that's not true.
And maybe you're not going to change someone's political party, but I think that, you know, you should still give people who are on the fence the opportunity to learn, or you should call someone on their ignorant shit, because people are never too old to be like, hey, I just realized, you know, for a long time, this is something that I've been saying or it's something that I've been doing is racist or it's sexist, or, you know, you find that niche where they have an opportunity to learn about something. And, I mean, you look at I know there are people in my own life who, even as adults, they're never going to change political parties. They're never going to, you know, somehow they've attached onto this idea of being a Republican and what it means. But as they've gotten older and they've gotten to an opportunity where they're learning about something or they're thinking about something, they're like, oh, that point does make more sense to me.
Hey, thanks for helping me out with this podcast today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm here to educate the world, motherfucker. Thanks for being here with me.
In your office?
In my office?
In your office. At our house. This is season 2, episode 1 of the Real Cognition Podcast.